Jason, good to have you with us as we record this program for airing this coming weekend. We are looking back at the Republican National Convention a week or so ago, and we're going to talk specifically about education policy, universal school choice in particular. Before we get into what Republicans are now proposing, which I understand is a bit of a departure here in a good way, let's explain to our audience what we mean by the term universal school choice.
I think we can start with what's school choice. School choice is an umbrella term that covers a variety of different policies. School choice could be policies that allow you to enroll at a public school that is outside of your assigned district. It could be a charter school, which is a privately run but publicly funded school. Or what we're talking about today would be vouchers or education savings accounts. Vouchers where state tax dollars follow the child to the school of the parent's choice, or an even more robust form of education choice, which is the education savings account. Like the voucher, about 90% of state funding per pupil follows the child, but it can be used for a much wider variety of education options. So not just private schools, also things like tutoring, textbooks, homeschool curricula, online learning, special needs therapy, and then unused funds can be rolled over from year to year. In years past, the Republican Party has embraced a variety of school choice options, but they were generally limited to certain populations, low-income families, students with special needs. This year, however, the Republican Party platform for the first time endorsed universal school choice, which means that every single child in the state who's eligible to enroll in a K-12 public school would also be eligible for one of those school choice options, usually the education savings account.
School choice, universal school choice, Jason, is an idea that it has been tried successfully in a couple of states, has it not?
Yeah, actually, well, as of just a few years ago, there were no states that had universal school choice. West Virginia and Arizona were the first two in 2021 and 2022 to adopt universal school choice policies. But as of this recording, there are now 11 states that have adopted new programs or expanded their existing ones to all children in the state in their state. And there's about 36% of kids nationwide that are now eligible for a private school choice program.
Since this does occur on a state-by-state basis largely, Jason, is there a role nationally for Congress and the president to play in giving more Americans the option of universal school choice?
I think primarily the feds need to just step out of the way. The vast majority of the funding and fortunately the control is at the state level. Unfortunately, though, the feds have been meddling in education for a long time. And, a friend of mine says that, only 8.5% of funding per child comes from the feds, but 60% of the regulations come from the federal government. What the next administration could and should do is to reduce the federal footprint and restore the locus of control to families.
Is this also part of the effort, and we've seen this in various parts of not only the Republican National Platform, but the conservative movement, of parental empowerment, of giving parents more control over their own children's education? Do you see this as part of that?
Oh, absolutely. And in recent years, I think the public has started to wake up to the reality of what's going on in the public school system. The COVID pandemic and really the response of schools to the COVID pandemic opened people's eyes to the fact that schools are not, as parents thought they were, accountable to the families in the community. They're more accountable to special interests that are operating and working in the system, particularly the unions. So when parents were ready for schools to reopen, but the unions wanted to keep them closed so that they could extract political concessions, those schools remained closed. And then even when they reopened, parents, having seen the quality of education that their child had access to through Zoom school and the radicalization of the classroom, parents stayed aware and engaged, and they have not liked what they've seen even after schools reopened, whether it was mask mandates or biological males in girls' locker rooms or politicized units in the classroom. So parents said, you know what, maybe it would be better to have a system where I can choose whatever learning environment aligns with my values and works best for my child, and the money will follow the child.
So how do we then also empower students who may not have a two-parent household, may not have any parent who's really engaged? What sort of system could be put in place to assist those students in their effort to navigate the educational system?
Well, school choice really is the rising tide that lifts all boats. So even those students who remain in their geographically assigned school benefit from having school choice, because school choice fundamentally changes the incentives, right? Right now, most children are in a school where they are a captive audience, and their parents are essentially a captive audience, especially in low-income areas. Wealthy people already have school choice. They can either afford to live in a school district that has a higher performing public school, or they can afford to pay private school tuition. Lower income families often don't have those options. So when you change the incentive structure, and if the school is not providing the service that parents want, whether it's the quality of the education or those other things we discussed, those parents can leave and the money will leave with them. That means that those schools have a much stronger incentive to improve, right? Just throwing money at a broken problem, a broken system, is not going to solve the problem. You need to change the incentives. That's why we've seen more than 24 studies of the effects of school choice programs on public school performance have found a statistically significant positive effect, which is to say, when families can choose, the public schools improve.
We have been talking with Jason Bedrick. He is a research fellow in the Center for Education Policy, and that, of course, is at the Heritage Foundation, based in Washington, D.C. Jason, tell us just a little bit about the Heritage Foundation. Also, where can folks go on the web to learn more about this topic?
Sure. The Heritage Foundation is the nation's premier conservative think tank. It's located in Washington, D.C., but it operates all across the country. I myself am based in Phoenix, Arizona. And they can learn more about our work at heritage.org.
Jason Bedrick of the Heritage Foundation. Jason, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.